Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, sky watchers delight in two planets near the moon. A scientist explains the latest mission to explore the planet Mars. And the weird science of naked mole rats. Here's a scientist soundbite.
Get up and look toward the east, and you'll see the two brightest planets near each other, Venus and Jupiter.
That's sky watcher Deborah Bird. More with her later, but first, science news of the week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
NASA announced on July 10th that the Cassini spacecraft, which has been orbiting Saturn since 2004, has discovered a vortex at the south pole of Saturn's largest moon, Titan. For a movie showing this mass of swirling gas around Titan's south pole, visit earthsky.org.
Russian firefighters have been battling wildfires for months. More than 30 wildfires were burning at the time of this recording in far eastern Russia, according to NASA. Greenpeace says more land in Russia has already burned in 2012 than in 2010, a year that intense wildfires affected western Russia.
According to new research, elevated levels of atmospheric carbon dioxide accelerate carbon loss in the soils of forests. The new evidence supports an emerging view that although forests remove a substantial amount of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, much of the carbon is being stored in living woody biomass rather than as dead organic matter in soils.
On July 6th, the sunspot group AR-1515 released an X-flare that affected Earth's geomagnetic field on July 9th and 10th. Sunspot 1515 is now turning away from Earth as the sun rotates on its axis, but another large active sunspot region is now turning our way. AR-1520 emerged several days ago over the sun's southeastern edge.
A NASA-sponsored researcher at the University of Iowa has developed a way for spacecraft to hunt down hidden magnetic portals in the vicinity of Earth. These portals link the magnetic field of our planet to that of the sun. For a cool NASA video on the subject, visit earthsky.org. That's science news of the week. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. Song of the week this week is by Burgess Meredith. It's called The Big Deal.
Oh,
Find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Burr joins us now with news of the global night sky. Two gorgeous planets come into view. Welcome, Deborah.
Hey, Jorge. Well, what I have to say today is pretty simple, and that is set your alarm for early in the morning before the sun comes up, and just once, and get up and look toward the east, and you'll see the two brightest planets near each other, Venus and Jupiter.
So how can I tell Venus from Jupiter? What am I looking at?
Well, so there's going to be the two planets there. They're both very bright, brighter than anything else in the sky, with the exception of the moon. And I'm going to talk about the moon in just a second. But if you're looking at any time this month toward the eastern sky, you're going to see two bright objects there. The brighter one is the planet Venus. It's the brightest planet we ever see from Earth. And the other one is the planet Jupiter, second brightest planet we ever see from Earth.
And what about the moon?
Well, so the moon plays a role if you're hearing this around the middle of July. So if you're hearing this on July 14th or 15th, you're going to want to get up in the morning, tomorrow morning. So that's the morning of July 15th or the morning of July 16th. And if you look in the direction of Venus and Jupiter in the east before dawn, you'll also see the moon. It'll be a little waning crescent moon, very pretty next to the planets. So if you're ever going to set your alarm and look at these two planets, especially on the morning of the 15th and 16th, look for them then, and you'll have a really pretty view of the moon as well.
So this is something that early birds anywhere on Earth can see Jupiter and Venus near the moon.
That's right. And we've been getting all kinds of pictures on our Facebook page of these two planets over the past few weeks. People from everywhere on Earth are seeing them. So, get up and join the crowd.
Awesome. Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. And we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We'd love to hear from you on Facebook. Tell us where you're from. You can find us as Earth Sky. Today's Weird Science is about one of our favorite creatures here at Earth Sky, the naked mole rat of East Africa. Ryan Britton is back with a story about it. Welcome, Ryan.
Glad to be here. Okay, well, the naked mole rat is, as you said, one of our favorite creatures here at Earth Sky. It's a small rat, about 3.5 inches in length, but they live underground in colonies like ants, and they have a naked mole rat queen. They can run backwards as fast as they can run forwards. They have a strong resistance to cancer, and they can live to be 30 years old. So that's what I'm here to talk about today. Think about it. They live to be 30 years old. Most rats live to be, what, 3 or 4? And so it's fitting because the naked mole rats are completely hairless. They're very wrinkled. And, I think every single one of them looks like a 100-year-old man.
And I understand there have been some studies about their longevity.
Right. Scientists are looking into it. Tel Aviv University and the University of Texas Health Science Center are trying to figure out just how the naked mole rat lives so long.
And what'd they find?
Well, they found out that the naked mole rat has a protein. It's called NRG1. And what this does is it protects the neurons of the brain. These universities have found that the naked mole rat has this neuron protector in the exact same amounts throughout their lifespan, so it doesn't go down as they get older. And they think that because their brains are better protected, they stay in good shape, because of this protein, and they live longer, much longer than other rats.
Interesting.
So keep in mind that humans and rats are about 85% the same genetically. So this protein could be the key to humans living longer and keeping our faculties, our ability to think longer. So that's pretty cool.
So naked mole rats for science. Ryan, where can people find out more?
Well, sciencedaily.com has some more information on the Israeli and United States study. Also, you have to check out io9.com's article on the 10 reasons naked mole rats will inherit the Earth.
Thanks, Ryan.
You're welcome.
Earth Sky's Ryan Britton, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Mars Science Laboratory is NASA's newest mission to explore the surface of the planet Mars, and it features a new rover called Curiosity. In early August of 2012, the Curiosity rover will reach the Martian surface after a space journey of 352 million miles or 567 million kilometers. On the line to talk more about this latest mission to Mars is research geologist John Grotzinger of the California Institute of Technology. Dr. Grotzinger is the project scientist for the NASA Mars Science Laboratory rover mission. Dr. Grotzinger, welcome.
Great, thanks for having me.
What's the status of the mission?
Well, the status of the mission is that we're doing real well right now, and everything is looking good. The instruments have all been checked out and performing well. And the spacecraft is cruising well on its trip to Mars.
What's new about the Mars Science Laboratory?
Well, what's new about this mission is that it takes a significant step towards the challenge of eventual life detection experiments on the surface of Mars. And the way that we do this intermediate step is by asking the question about exploring habitable environments. So in this case, we presume that life may have evolved on Mars, and then ask the question, if it did, what would be the kinds of habitats that microorganisms might reside in? And so what we do then is have a very complex payload of science instruments that allows us to go beyond where other rovers have gone before by taking a mobile chemistry laboratory with many of the pieces of equipment that you would use in a laboratory here on Earth to study very ancient rocks that you might have sampled and look for ancient signs of habitable environments.
What is the Mars Curiosity hoping to find on Mars?
So to be very explicit, the Mars Science Laboratory Curiosity rover is not a life detection mission. We do not have the capability to know if life is present on the surface of the planet today. And we also do not have the ability to look for ancient single-celled microorganisms present within ancient rocks like we can do on Earth. And so what we are is a mission dedicated to the search for habitable environments. And by that, what we mean is a place where there would have been water present, a source of energy, which is what organisms utilize to live with, and then a source of carbon, which is what all organisms for life as we know it are built out of. So water, energy, and carbon for us define the targets that we're searching for with this mission.
The Mars Curiosity rover, it'll roll out early August of 2012. What are some highlights of its early mission during its first explorations of the Martian surface?
So in contrast to previous rover missions like Spirit and Opportunity, Curiosity will unveil itself much more slowly because it's a much more sophisticated spacecraft. So what we're going to do is we'll take small steps that will allow us to systematically unpack all of its capabilities and then be ready to use them on the surface. It'll take about a month until we have done everything that we need to do in checking out scientific instruments and making some initial measurements. But as we do those instrument checkouts, we will make measurements and we will acquire images. And so right away, probably if we're lucky, within a few hours of landing, we might have the first images of the surface of Mars where we land. And then our hope is that in the next day or two, we will see the first color images of the surface of Mars. And then as we go on, we'll be able to make the first weather measurements. We'll then be able to look for water-bearing mineral compounds in the subsurface soils. And then eventually we'll be able to use some of the more sophisticated instruments to look and check for methane in the atmosphere. That'll probably be about 10 days or 2 weeks if all goes well after we land. And then finally, about a month into the mission, we will be free to start drilling the first rocks. And we have a drill. It's about 1.5 centimeters in diameter and penetrates up to 5 centimeters down into a rock. And we get the powder back from that and dump it into the interior of Curiosity, where there are two mobile chemistry labs that give us definitive mineralogy and also tell us about early environmental constraints in the history of Mars, and also allow us to look for carbon if it's present.
Tell us more about these rocks. How are they different than what a rock hunter might expect here on Earth? Tell us a little bit more about the rocks that this Mars Curiosity rover is examining.
Well, that's the interesting thing about it, is that on Earth, we have a wide variety of different types of rocks, and we're pretty sure that we have the kind of rocks that we think we see on Mars are present on Earth. What's different is the abundances that they're present in. So Earth has particular types of rocks, and those kinds of rocks tell us about ancient habitable environments on Earth. But then there are environments which are very unusual on Earth, and those seem to have been very common on Mars. So the really interesting thing about this mission is that even if we never find signs of organic carbon, we should be able to use our instruments to tell us about the early environmental history of Mars, which gives us a kind of a mirror to look back at ourselves on and ask how it was that we got to where we are now, and what are the ways in which the early environmental evolution of Earth influenced life on Earth. We can ask the same questions about Mars and ask, if we never find evidence of life on Mars, what was it that happened that may not have been favorable for the development of life on Mars?
The Curiosity rover is going to land at the foot of a recently named mountain on Mars, this Mount Sharp. Tell us, why this location? What's important about Mount Sharp on planet Mars?
Well, Mount Sharp is a really interesting place. We had four final landing sites, and in the end we chose the Gale Crater site because of this mountain in the middle of it. And to give you a sense of the size of this mountain, if we land down, we will land down at its base, and if we were to drive to the top, it would be 5 kilometers high. So that's higher than the tallest mountain in the lower 48 states of the U.S. But the thing about the mountain is that it's shaped like Hawaii. So it has a very tall peak, but it has very gently sloping flanks. And that's the key, is that those low sloping flanks are what allow us to drive the rover up there. And as we get to Mount Sharp, what we see is a whole series of different kinds of rocks that contain evidence that we see from orbit for several potentially different types of habitable environments so that we get to explore. So in other places on Mars, we might get to explore one or two different kinds of ancient environments. Here at Mount Sharp, we think we're going to be able to get at least four or five different types of environments.
What's the most important thing you'd like people today to know about the Mars Science Laboratory?
I think the most important thing is the incredible capability that we are able to construct with the help of thousands of engineers and scientists and land this thing on Mars. Mars is our nearest neighbor, but basically we're going to put a vehicle down on the surface on August 5th that is the size of a car, a small car, and has the capabilities of the analytical laboratories in my home institution at Caltech. This might be two or three rooms full of equipment, that we have miniaturized and been able to put in the size of the vehicle, the size of a Mini Cooper.
Research geologist John Grotzinger. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at Earth Sky Studio B in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next stage. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know.